Good afternoon, Bay Area, and welcome to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darton, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, we're having a roundtable discussion of Ryan Coogler's Sinners. Bay Area writers Audrey Williams, Kevin Dublin, Reverend Harry Williams, and Nazila Jameson are going to spend the entire hour with me discussing the film. And just to warn you, there will be spoilers. Today's show, we're going to sink our teeth deep into the themes of Sinners. That's all coming up. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darton. This year, Ryan Coogler took us back to 1930s rural Clarksville, Mississippi, and captivated moviegoers with a supernatural horror story about black twin brothers. They moved back to their segregated town after living in Chicago and hustling in Chicago, and they moved back to open a juke joint. But vampires are lurking. They're hungry for blood and power and, shall I even say, rhythm and soul? But, you know, on opening night of the brothers' new spot, all hell breaks loose, literally.
We've been gone a long time. We back now.
You twins?
Nah, we cousins.
There are legends of people with the gift of making music so true it can conjure spirits from the past and the future. This gift can bring fame and fortune.
Will somebody take me in your eyes?
But it also can pierce the veil between life and death.
Sinners made an estimated $365 million at the box office, and that's according to the data site, The Numbers. People have seen this film several times. It's an entertaining but very deep film, and we covered Sinners back in the spring, but there's so much more to talk about, including the blues, the black church, racism, colonization, love and intimacy, freedom. And returning to talk about Sinners are Audrey T. Williams. She is the co-author of the World Fantasy Convention that's coming to Oakland in 2026. Also, poet Nazila Jameson. She hosts the Berkeley Poetry Slam and in her spare time writes horror screenplays. Kevin Dublin is an educator, poet, filmmaker, and founder of Living Room SF. And later on, we'll hear from Reverend Harry Williams, because we can't talk about Sinners, right, without maybe talking with a preacher not being in the room with us. Harry Williams, also known as OG Rev, is a hip-hop artist, author, and founder of Ground Game Ministries, and he's also returning guest of Sights and Sounds. Welcome, everybody.
Hey, hey.
Hey, Janae.
Hey. Hey, it's so good to see you all. So how many times have you seen the film?
I just hit seven.
Seven?
Like, 2 days ago.
six and a half, because I started to watch it yesterday on Max.
Okay, I watched a little bit. Okay.
Now that it's streaming, I'm coming up on four.
Okay. Why? First of all, movies are so expensive right now. And people, before this movie, people were not really going to the movies a whole lot. I know people that I've returned to the movies because of this film. What is it about this film that has drawn people? I have not seen this level of excitement about a film, I would say, maybe since Black Panther, and I would say maybe Barbie. But definitely, like, as far as in the black community, not since Black Panther, the first one, have I seen so much excitement and thrill and just people feeling seen.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. I mean, to me, it's very much like it's literature. You know, sometimes when you encounter, you know, a film can be to entertain. A film can be to activate, and a film can be to heal. And that's like, that's something that this is doing. It's something beyond just entertainment. Damn. And it's entertaining.
It's very entertaining. Did anybody else want to add? Nazila?
I mean, I think for me, part of it was just seeing it in the context of different people. So the first night I saw it with poets.
with me, and including then, me and Kevin.
Yep, I saw it with you and Kevin and MK. Yeah. And that was amazing. And then the second night I saw it with like my friend Betsy, who's a horror fan, and our other friend Seven, who like doesn't like horror at all. And so seeing it with them was different. And then I saw it with three white friends. And that was interesting. Pretty much anybody that told me they hadn't seen it, I was like, oh, you want to go see it? And then I went and saw it with them. And it was just interesting for me to see the different reactions and have, like, you know, sort of different conversations with people afterwards.
Yeah.
And to see, like, what impressed upon them about the movie. And also, like, I don't know, I get this 3-year-old thing when I like something where I don't mind, like, seeing it over and over and over. So for me, it was that do it again, like, aspect. I saw it the first 2 times and then anything was an excuse to do it again.
Right. It's funny because I don't watch a lot of horror either. And so I warned Kevin, Azila, and MK, shout out to MK, who's also a fabulous poet. I told them I was going to jump in their lap. And so I did.
Then you did. I loved that.
I was like, Kevin, I apologize to your partner. Tell us nothing serious. It's just fear and cowardice.
No, that was amazing. I loved that so much.
Now, Zila, when Azila saw me, she was like, is that your name, Darden? Because, you know, I don't do horror. What about you, Audrey? The fact that people paid seven times, you know, whatever, a movie ticket, that's some coin.
Well, I will say it's a couple of things for me. So first of all, when I found out that they had specifically filmed it to be on that film, the IMAX, what was it, 70 millimeter film,
yes.
I found the IMAX and I wanted to see it in the way that Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan had envisioned it to be seen and heard, with that expansive wraparound screen and that level, that quality of the sound involved. And then also for me, I don't know if it's because I'm a writer and a poet, but it's similar to when there's a juicy novel or a story or a poem that pulls me in and I want to keep reading it over and over. Like one of my favorite books, Temple of My Familiar, it's all like ratty on the edges and stuff because I reread that. Because every time, depending where I'm at, it's like peeling back the layers of an onion. I get the more like the deeper and deeper levels of understanding. And then by now I've had so many, Kevin knows, me and Kevin been talking about this. We've had a panel the other night on this, like everybody is expanding my horizons in more allegory and deeper metaphor. And I'm not done unpacking it, y'all. Let's go.
Yeah, no, like, and every time you watch it, you know, you find something different. And it just really speaks to Ryan Coogler's brilliance, just as an artist, as a writer, as an observer, just how he takes in so much. And it's so layered, which is why I don't know. He said he wasn't going to do a follow-up. I don't know. I won't say I believe him. I don't think he has been... A message hasn't been sent to him yet from above. Because I'm like, it's a whole lot of work, you could do it. But with that, again, just to warn people that are listening, we are talking about Sinners and there will be spoilers, okay? So if you haven't seen Sinners, like maybe go on KLW.org, watch like my show, listen to my show from last week and then like, you know, listen to this one. But if you have seen Sinners or you don't mind spoilers, stay with us. Let's talk about these brothers, Smoke and Stack, who, and when Reverend Harry gets here, I'm going to ask him because their real names are Elijah and Elias. So I thought that was interesting too. But here are these two brothers who, you know, they're from this small town, Mississippi. They're veterans. You know, they was hustling Irish and Italian folks in Chicago, Italian gangs of mobsters in Chicago, raised some money, brought that money back to Mississippi so they can open up this juke joint. But they are so completely different, even though they are twins. I love the bond with them, and also, too, I love the difference. Let's talk about the difference. What did they each represent to you, whoever wants to jump in first? Because they were very, to me, Stack was very, like hopeful and naive to some degree, and Smoke, which I thought was the name fit perfect because Smoke was a hothead a little bit. Smoke always had a gun, so he was smoky, right? So and he smoked a cigarette, but it was just, you know, it was these different symbolism of smoke. What did they represent to you, especially to as Black men? Who wants to go?
I personally thought that the twins were done really well because I've known those twins. And I've never seen twins that I mean, I guess, you know, they're kind of psychotic and it would be impossible to survive if they were actually exactly alike. But I've seen that set of twins where one was like carefree and doing what they want and reckless a little bit. And the other twin rose up to be the responsible one.
Mm-hmm.
I think they sort of really fit well together because I think that if Stack wasn't, you know, so reckless and had so much humor and was kind of easygoing, Smoke would be way too serious. He would make himself like way too serious. And I think that Stack wouldn't survive if Smoke wasn't responsible.
That
looked out for him.
Right. And I agree with that. What do you think, Kevin? Especially too, Kevin, I'm interested too, mm-hmm. as well as you as a Black man, seeing these representation of these two, and there's different types of representations of Black men throughout the film.
Right. I mean, like it's stated, you know, when Sammy is gonna go leave with Stack, he's like, yeah, watch out for his back because he can't watch his own back, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then the story around, I mean, the trauma really that, you know, that informed them from, you know, abuse from the father and having to you know, fight back, and you know, Stack not being able to be the one who, you know, can fight back, and so Smoke stepping up for him and having to be the one who ultimately, you know kills him. I mean, so there's so much in terms of with the film, like freedom is that core.
Yeah.
And they both are seeking freedom in these two different ways that is the opposite of how they are depicting themselves. Yeah. To me, like, and then the color part of the color is there too, like the blue and the red, and like, you know, attempting to be, you know, not even attempting, having being forced to be serious, being forced to take the lead, being forced to have this, you know, cool demeanor, but a very much like, you know, you can't leave here without, you know, being able to say to somebody that, you know, you almost robbed the Smokestack twins, you know.
Right. Because he would bust the cap, which is why
right.
he's called Smoke. I didn't even think, you know, because, you know, I like, again, spoiler alert. So I know with the blue and the red, what I saw, and I didn't even realize it till we first introduced to them, like the background's red on Stack and the background's red, blue on Smoke, which is a ton of foreshadowing in this film, a ton of foreshadowing. And I didn't even realize that, like, that red, because I was thinking the red represents the blood, right? Because we know eventually, spoiler, that Stack gets bit, right? And so he becomes a vampire. And then we see Smoke, spoiler, you know, ascends to the ancestors, right? So I'm thinking of like the skies, blue and all that kind of stuff. But I didn't even think too as far as like blue being like a color of like where you, like a very professional color in a sense, and red, you can kind of wild out a bit. So you have that freedom. See, that's why I like having these conversations, because you see something different all the time. Yeah. Audrey, did you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, in addition to like, you know, I tend to think of things in terms of opposites and yin yang. So like red being the hot and like blue being the cold, you know, and aside from, I think we talked last time a little bit about blue, like the color of the haint blue, like the Conjuring had like protecting her man Smoke. Honestly, the way I had to keep them straight in the beginning was that Smoke was protected by Annie and some of her conjuring power. So like when she would light the smoke, like burn the, what is that called? The I can't believe I'm blanking, but she would burn the ceremonial, like the sacred smoke, yeah. right when she got in there, like she, the cleansing, like the sage, that's what it was. She burned sage. So I had to remember, okay, Smoke is the one with the cleansing smoke from his conjure woman, Annie. That's how I had to remember them. And then Stack, I was like, yeah, he's trying to stack that cash.
Right.
So that's how I had to keep them straight in my head.
I just noticed with the hats, one had a fedora, you know, and one had like a newspaper boy hat. You mentioned yep. Annie, Audrey. And Annie was my favorite character. I thought Annie was a hero. And she practices hoodoo. She and Smoke are lovers. He's been gone some time, you know, some years fighting World War I, again, hustling in Chicago with his brother. And I want to play a clip, kind of that scene. So here's a clip. They're out in Mississippi, you know, in her home. He comes, Smoke comes to visit her, and he questions her spirituality that has protected him over the years.
I've seen men die ways I didn't even know was possible. I ain't never saw no roots, no demons, no ghosts, no magic. Just power. And only money can give you that.
You fool. All that war and whatever the hell he been doing in Chicago. And you back here in front of me. Do arms, do legs, do eyes, and a brain that work. How you know I ain't pray? And work every route my grandmama taught me to keep you and that crazy brother yours safe every day since you've been gone.
Okay, so the second, so when I watched this the other day, that scene, when she starts talking, the wind blows. I didn't even catch that in the film. I didn't catch that in the film. And then when she starts talking, like, I said, oh my goodness. So, like, her power, you know, is rising. You know, there's been some debates about Annie and Smoke as far as are they couples goals, which I don't usually like to use that phrase, or struggle love. Struggle love. For people who don't know, so like that's a term in the Black community as far as like this notion of Black women supposed to just like struggle with like in their romantic relationships and like, you know, put their man first and all, and they might not be reciprocal of all the effort they put into. Audrey looking at me like, why are you going there? are they struggle love? Is it struggle love?
Just let them be in love. Let him just love that thick, delicious, dark Black woman. Let it be.
Dazila, you want to add something?
I mean, I think it's not struggle love because she handy with the blade, so she wasn't struggling that much.
That's true. She put a blade, but she waited for him.
She waited, but like, you know what I mean? I think Annie would have just been there regardless.
Okay.
I think she knew he was going to come back because she knew him really well. Just like when she asked him for the mojo bag, after all that crap he talked, he still was wearing it, wasn't he?
He sure was, yeah. And that mojo bag has protected him, right. Yeah.
Exactly. He's like, I never seen any power but money. But when she was like, you still got that mojo bag, was hanging around his neck. Mm-hmm. So, you know, mm-hmm. Blah, 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 Smoke.
Kevin,
I think I just remember where that's from. I was like I was about to be like, oh, you know, we accept the love we think we deserve. And I was like, what's that from? Like, oh, that's the Perks of Being Wallflower. Annie is not, she very much has her boundaries set. And I think that is, you know, kind of the issue, or not the issue, because there's also boundaries that Smoke set. And they did not align at four time because of, like, you know, drama and, right. and, you know, and the pain. And, you know, that's there. And so he, you know, maybe due to age, he ran away from it. I mean, and a part of that too is me thinking about, you know, being a Black man and like the vulnerability we are allowed to have and are not allowed to have. And so, but she, you know, she stood on it. She was there and she was ready for, you know, she was ready for him when he returned.
Yeah.
So I'm for smoking, Annie. I'm glad they on the other side with the ancestors. I'm glad.
Well, yeah, some people are like, that's struggle love, and I would have been waiting. He out there playing and hustling, drinking and doing God knows what. She been praying for. I mean, we don't know what Annie was doing while he was, you know,
exactly.
We don't know.
She seemed to have a thriving business.
She did. Right. She did. What, you know?
I mean, say that about Stack. Don't say that about Smoke.
Right.
Stack was the one in the street.
Yeah.
And we know what Stack was doing because Mary told us what he was doing, but we can't say that on the show because I want to keep my job.
Yeah, yeah.
But okay. okay, so y'all, I don't know. I kind of was feeling it was kind of struggle love, but then I was like, it's a different time. You know, and then there's grief, right, too? Like, that was some resistance to coming home. But you make a good point, Audrey, about, like, who was out in the streets was Stack, which is interesting because, big spoiler alert, is that, you know, he was out there playing and, like, and he gets confined to eternity with Mary. And I'm like, is that heaven or hell? Because he was out there. you know, right? I don't want to be a player no more. Because he was crushing a lot. If y'all know what crushing a lot means, you know what I'm saying. So, you know, he had to give that up.
Yeah.
You know.
But he said he was thinking about her every day.
He was. I'm sure he was. But, you know. You know, that's sometimes what folks be saying. Well, he
don't believe.
He definitely thinking about her every day. Audrey, you want to add something?
I wanted to go back to Smoke and to the names, because here we go again. Y'all said something that triggered a little bit deeper of a metaphor for me, because going back to the ancestors, I don't know, we've talked too much about the Orishas, right? And so there is an Orisha of wind, which is Oya. So when you said, which I hadn't even noticed, that when Annie talked that time and the wind started going, I wonder if she was a daughter of Oya, who rules over the winds. And guess what? Wind carries smoke. So that's deep. And because, and I say that too, I wanted to bring it up because Michael B. Jordan in a real life interview had said, my mama raised me from the womb for this role because she trained me to be a Baba Walu, which is the practice of worshiping the African Orishas. So just wanted to throw that out there.
Wow. So that's, again, like I said, it's so many little details that Ryan Coogler put in that you I think just for generations, we'll be digging into this. If you're just joining us, I'm here chatting with writers Audrey T. Williams, Nazila Jameson, Kevin Dublin, and who's just now joining us is Reverend Harry Williams. We're talking about the film Sinners, and warning, there are spoilers in this discussion in case you haven't watched the film. And Reverend Harry, so glad to see you. You know, something that Kevin raised that he wanted to hear from you, and I also want to hear from you, as we're looking at spirituality. Before you got here, I made a joke. I was like, we can't talk about sinners without having a preacher, right?
Oh, my goodness.
But I want to start with, you know, extending this conversation on spirituality, right?
Yes.
So, you know, Audrey mentioned Orishas. There's so much spirituality in this film. And yes. I remember, too, Nazila, when you were on last time, we were talking about how there was resistance to the Black church talking about this film. And now I'm seeing Black churches actually talking about it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, early in the film, there's, you know, we see this Black church and preacher boy.
Yes.
Who's the young man gifted with, you know, with the ability to play blues music. His father is a minister. He wants him to give up playing the blues. Poet Saul Williams, you know, a legendary poet, plays preacher boy's father. Now, Reverend Harry, when I talked to you about this, you were really moved about this part of the story because it reminded you of how the church called blues the devil's music.
Yes.
And I also thought about you because you are a rapper.
Yes.
And so somebody could easily say that to you, like, you doing the devil's music because you rapping, right? But you have this ties to the church. Can you speak on that?
Yes, I grew up in a fundamentalist home where blues, soul music, anything that could make your foot pat besides gospel music was considered sin. And I wasn't allowed to, so I could deeply relate to the movie, the character in the movie, and the dichotomy that he felt as far as pursuing spirituality, and within the context of his music. So I was when I became a born again Christian as a grown man, the first thing they told me was you can't rap anymore, and so I had hundreds of dollars worth of records, and I broke many of them,
wow.
and changed my name back. For my original name.
Mm.
So I could really relate to that.
And so when you were growing up, because you said you remember hearing that blues was the devil's music.
Blues was the devil's music. On Sunday, in most households in the African-American community, you couldn't listen to the blues. The blues was considered the devil's music. The blues was the evil offspring of gospel music. Years ago, when Ray Charles came out with a song called I Got a Woman, where he combined gospel music with secular lyrics, that was considered the height of blasphemy. But so you had two groups of people that lived side by side. You had your Saturday night people and your Sunday night people, which was what you saw in the movie The Color Purple.
Right.
And so, yeah, the faith community And it was always an interplay between both of them. People weren't always completely true to one or the other, mm-hmm. but it was considered something that was completely off the margins, off the chart, and extremely, the blues is considered the devil's music. And I grew up with that understanding.
I want to pull Nazila in too as well, because, you know, she was the first person when she saw Preacher Boy come on screen. She was like, that's Robert Johnson, who was this, blues player, died very young. And the mythology is, the story is, whatever you want to believe, that he made a deal with the devil, became a really great blues singer, and then he died. And I know too, Nazila, you're very familiar with different spiritualities. You growing up in the church, you also too mm-hmm. knowing about hoodoo. What do you think about, because, you know, what we see in the end, spoiler alert, is that, you know, because his father was like, I want you to, you know, play this guitar for the church. And so Preacher Boy chose his passion, which was the blues. Mm-hmm. Did you see that, Nazila, as, you know, and I'm thinking of the music Reverend Harry does. Do you see that as like him putting God into the blues, or like seeing this? You know, it is something to his heart and to his spirit, right? Like, did you see, mm-hmm. I don't know, what was the significance of that in your opinion?
So what I found significant, really significant, is this couple of scenes before that. He defeated the vampire, the so-called devil, with his guitar. And so thing that was called, you know, of the devil, actually defeated the devil. And I felt like when he made his choice, even, you know, when his dad was like, let go of that guitar, and he didn't let go of it, the impression that I got, especially the third time I saw the film, I thought about how he had defeated the devil with this. Like, that was what was holy to him. And it defied what his father said. But I feel like... traditional, especially Black churches and Black religion, is very rigid and has all these rules about, you know, when I grew up, we couldn't dance at all. If mm-hmm. we danced, it was for mm-hmm. the people. Like,
and Azula's from the South, too, just to remember.
I was there.
And my father was a minister. Yeah. And so growing up, like, in the Bible Belt as a preacher's daughter, like, we weren't allowed to dance. You couldn't listen to any secular music at all. I remember being at a Christian concert with my best friend's family, and I started nodding my head, and her mom gave me an evil look. And I'm like, and then, you know, gave me a sermon about how you shouldn't dance. Dancing is for men. Dancing is for man. You don't do that for the Lord. The Lord don't want to see you dance. But I also feel like a lot of that comes from this belief, which I feel like is ingrained in Black people from slavery, that joy is something to be despised.
That joy is something to be despised. Wow.
Right. So if it makes you happy,
you're breaking
up. You need to stick to this rigidity because joy is the devil.
I'm glad you brought that up, because something you and Reverend Harry said, or something's coming to me, because Preacher Boy's dad warns him, you keep dancing with the devil and one day he's going to follow you home, right? And Nazila, you mentioned that he did defeat the devil with his guitar, which I mm-hmm. also think too was a gift from the ancestor, because that guitar was Smoke and Stack's father's guitar. So I thought that was deep too, that was the guitar that defeated the devil, and Smoke and Stack's father was abusive. But that aside, going back to, you keep dancing with the devil, one day he's going to follow you home, right? So Stack becomes a vampire, and decades later, and he's been following Preacher Boy's career as a blues singer over these years, and we see him follow him to Chicago where he's a blues singer. So it's interesting to see the devil, this person followed him home, but also this person, Stack, was his biggest cheerleader. I don't know that anybody, that kind of just came to me just now. I don't know if that resonated with anybody, or did I go too deep? You know, I'm from Oakland, so. mm-hmm. But do you all see what I'm saying, though?
Like, yes.
Yeah.
Like, the vampire, but he didn't harm him. So, right. Yeah, but... I just thought about that. That's interesting. You know, Kevin, something I know you wanted to talk about, I know you really wanted to hear from Reverend Harry, is about these intersecting themes of sin and freedom. And Azila brought up that point too, as far as like, with, you know, with Black Americans going back to slavery, we weren't encouraged to have joy, right? Like even the slave Bible that was given, which is a Bible that was given to people who were enslaved, they took out Psalms and like Exodus, you know, scripture that to inspire our ancestors. And so, Reverend Harry, you brought up The Color Purple. I know, Kevin, you brought that up too during another conversation we had. And so we're looking at these themes of like you know, God trying to tell you something that was in The Color Purple. Mm-hmm. We hear, you know, Preacher Boy's dad warning him, you know, and this theme of sinners have a soul too. Either you want to talk about that, just this thing of sin and freedom, and where's the border, and where does it bleed into each other, and like, you know, mm-hmm. all of that.
Yeah. Well, one thing that they did in the movie was they neutered the Christianity. They neutered, they emasculated the whole Christian faith. I thought it was an excellent movie. I think it's a classic movie that'll be seen 100 years from now. But when you look at the portrayal of the church, it's very milquetoast. That there's no shouting in the church. There's no hand clapping. His father is this very austere character who probably sits at home while his congregants are out in the field every day. His father's not a social justice-oriented preacher. And so you don't see joy. But if back in those days, Christianity, especially Black Christian faith, had something that they called the ring shout, where people stood out in the circle, and there was a lot of shouting, and there was possession by the Holy Spirit, where people spoke in tongues, and it was a very demonstrative thing that did empower people, not only to survive the rigors and the horrors of field slavery, but also to have the strength to fight back against their oppression.
Mm.
That's not seen in the movie. You don't see him portrayed as that. Saul Williams' father in real life was a very well-known preacher who I've heard of before I heard of Saul Williams, because of what happened with him and Tawana Brawley and Reverend Sharpton many years ago.
Mm.
His father opened the doors of the church when Tawana Brawley was running from the police and dared the police to come into the church after her. That was Saul Williams' father. So he's not showing that person in his portrayal of the pastor.
And remind folks who Tawana Brawley is.
Tawana Brawley was a young woman back in the 80s who said that she was kidnapped and molested by police officers in a small town in upstate New York. Reverend Al Sharpton, Bill Cosby, and others came to her aid, and she was a fugitive for a long time, and one of the places they hid her at was inside of Saul Williams' father's church.
So I wonder, too, if that depiction is going back to sins and freedom. It's like, is he free, right? This pastor who is very rigid as far as in his teaching. Kevin, did you want to ask something or ask a question?
Yeah, because there's that. I know I remember it's in 1 Corinthians, but I can't remember like exactly what chapter and verse. But, you know, it's like, you know, when you're tempted, you know, he will also, like, or the Lord will also provide a way out so that you can endure it. And Sammy, you know, finishes the verse without looking at the Bible. So it's like,
and Sammy's Preacher Boy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Preacher Boy. Yeah, so he knows, you know, he's like, oh, I know this. And you see it later when he's, you know, praying. And that like, I guess, you know, kind of final cut scene. I mean, the last word that is spoken as dialogue is free. You know, it's like, oh, that's when I felt free in terms of, you know, Stack. But the last thing we hear is Preacher Boy singing in This Little Light of Mine. And he's singing it while he's playing his blues guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, to me, like, come that, you know, these moments of catharsis, it's not something that's left, you know, that's one that's left him. And, you know, there's this division and this, you know, everything inside of the church is, at least how it's depicted here, you know, as you're saying, it's like, it's very binary. But I know Ryan Kugel had mentioned, you know, reading Amiri Baraka's, you know, Blues People. And so one of the things, you know, inside of that book is, you know, it's all a continuum.
Mm.
So they all feed each other into each other. Mm. You know, you can't have the blues without, you know, without, you know, spirituals and gospel. You can't have hip hop without it. You can't have anything. And that's one of the things that, you know, beautiful, brilliant, you know, scene was depicted.
Yeah, that scene where Preacher Boy is performing, and then you see the past, the present, and the future of Black music and art. Audrey, did you want to add something to that?
Yeah, again, y'all have just stirred up some deeper thoughts in me. I was thinking about sin versus freedom, and it's like, okay, sin as defined by who? Because the for me, the overall message is back to that main music montage. I call it the time travel Afrofuturism scene where Sammy's in the juke joint and the ancestors come through, and future ancestors come through for them, right? Because you got the girl twerking in the corner, which hadn't been invented yet, obviously, right?
Well, it was, but we didn't know. They wouldn't call it twerking, right?
Right? They're like, who that? What's she doing? Right. But, what I'm thinking about, and I'm glad that Reverend Harry brought up the ring shout, because the whole point of the movie for me overarching is the ways in which the oppressor disconnected us from our ancestral healing wisdom traditions. And so the ring shout was a dance. Forgive the crass analogy, but the electric slide and Cupid shuffle, these group dances that we get together and do today, like those are the dances that to me are maybe reminiscent of the ring shout and how we used to gather together in the hush arbor. I hope everybody knows what the hush arbor is, those secret mm-hmm. alcoves in the woods where our people had to go for safety and do the spirituality that they could do mm-hmm. in private, right? That's where you would go to the hush arbor secretly in the woods, do the ring shouts, do the things. And so if that type of, that was the healing, the ancestral healing we had brought over from Africa, and that was denied us through Christianity because it became a sin to dance, then therefore we were denied our healing. We were denied what we knew, right? And so that's what was coming up for me. And even, I'm gonna go back to my favorite other scene with Delta Slim in the car when he starts slapping his leg.
Oh yeah, that's your favorite scene.
Causation, yeah. Right? I'm calling that the original Somatics. Right. So that was just him individually, not dancing with a group, but within his own body could use vibration and sound, therefore music, to heal his own self in his own individual body. And so that's what I'm trying to come back to is like, what's the magic that the movie reminds us exists? Mm-hmm. And when I say magic, I mean ancestral healing magic, to be specific.
And we're even seeing that today with people doing Where the Fans At. If people got their fans, like Black folks, and then they're doing like the line dancing. For a lot of people, this is therapeutic right now with everything that's going on. Again, if you're just tuning in, I'm chatting with Audrey T. Williams, Nazila Jameson, Kevin Devlin, and Reverend Harry Williams, also known as OG Rev. They are all great Bay Area writers, and we're talking about the film Sinners. There are spoilers in this discussion, just to let you know. So if you haven't seen it, you might want to listen to one of my other shows on KLW.org. Because I don't want to spoil it for you. And then come back to KLW.org and listen to this show so you can hear us dissect this film. Let's talk about the vampires, because we haven't gotten to the vampires. And we have, can you believe we have 15 minutes left? A little less than 15 minutes. It goes by, I know it goes by so fast, especially when you got like 10 people on the call. But you know, I invited all of y'all. It was more people I wanted to invite. It was hard. I was like, who do I pick? Let's talk about vampires and who we invite in. And Annie says something profound that hit me when I just watched this scene. Let's take a listen.
How haints work. They switch places with the soul of a man. But vampires is different. Maybe the worst kind. The soul gets stuck in the body. Can't rejoin the ancestors. Cursed to live here with all this hate. Can't even feel the warmth of a sunrise.
Okay, then. Can we bring them back? Maybe if I kill the ones that made them this way.
Smoke. They have a connection, but they live on, even if the one that made them is killed. The best thing we can do for him is free his spirit from this curse. They gotta be killed, one by one.
But how the hell do we do that?
Sunlight. A wooden stake to the heart.
When I watched that scene, I said, is she talking about vampires? Because I can think of people who got so much hate, they can't enjoy the sunlight. And, you know, and I thought about you, Kevin, when you talked about how the movie ends with Preacher Boy singing This Little Light of Mine. And she's saying the only way, you know, to free them is the light and a stake to the heart, a change to the heart. I thought that was deep. When I watched it again, you know, that you can't even enjoy life because you're so filled with hate. You know, and these vampires who, you know, were really, really great. They're Remick, the lead one, you know, is Irish. And that's a whole nother, we could do a whole episode on that. And he wants this gift right? He wants this gift that Sammy Boy has of Preacher Boy has of music. He wants soul, right? He wants he's culture appropriating, like. And then the thing is, like, he has culture where he was able to bring the vampires together, right? And music, because a lot of people dig in the music that, you know, he was singing, right? But can y'all speak on that as far as, like, yeah, folks being filled with so much hate that they can't see the sun.
Right, right. I mean, that's, you know, kind of connected to that. A big question I have, and I'm curious what y'all think. So we know how Smoke and Annie are free. And there's this, like, freedom of Stack and Mary being able to have their relationship and exist in that way. But he also, I mean, it's been 60 years, and the happiest he's ever been is the day before that night when he got turned, you know?
Which so, says something about Mary. I didn't like Mary. Because I know if I was Mary, I'd be like, wait, that's the happiest you've been. I've been with you for 60 years. The happiest you was with your brother that night? What about me? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kevin.
Oh, no. I mean, that's, you know, that's it. There's that. You know, yeah. I mean, I guess what does that mean in terms of what Annie spoke about? Like, you're cursed to walk this earth. Like, this is not freedom. You know, he says it to Smoke too, when he's trying to convince them to come. He's like, they were never going to let us be free. Money can't do it. Your capitalism can't do it. Like, you can't just, like, get, you know, have enough wealth and then you're free. You have freedom. And maybe that exists for some people until they got gunned down at the end. Mm-hmm. But that this system, this world as it is created, was never meant for them to be free. And it's being dealt with in these kind of, you know, different ways. They're all going through it. Mary's going through it in her way, and the, like, you know, what she has to give up. You know, I mean, even Preacher Boys, you know, the church, you know, that is a way of getting through it. So the music, the blues, is a way of getting through it. You know, when Baldwin writes about the blues and what it is, when Barack writes about the blues and what it is, when Langston Hughes writes about the blues and what it is, right. Like, it is processing. It is healing.
And then you have someone like the vampire, Remick, who he wants our rhythm, but not our blues, right? Mm-hmm. And I know, Audrey, you wanted to talk about vampires in the music industry. And before, too, speaking of music, shout out to Raphael Sadiq, who actually contributed to the soundtrack of Sinner. So, you know, there's other Oakland influence into this piece. But, yeah, I mean, you know, he wants the rhythm, but not the blues, right? Mm-hmm. Audrey?
Yeah, absolutely. He did. And I'm thinking back to, I've been thinking about Remick's origin story and how he was sad. Like, he was like, I can't go back to my people either. And he was cut off. And there's so much. I hope, Janae, we could do a part three and just talk about the Irish. Kevin already knows this. I have a lot to say about the Irish, the parallels. I said not to play oppression Olympics with them, but there's a lot, you know, the way they came over on ships to be indentured servants, and the way that Remick also could not return to his ancestry. And he was mad at the vampires that made him, you know, he had a lot to say about that. But the thing I will say, the overarching allegory that I have made about what the vampires represent today is I talk about how Remick is to Sammy as Elvis was to Big Mama Thornton.
Mm.
That's the big analogy for me, because I believe Elvis, they didn't pay that Big Mama Thornton more than $500 for the Hound Dog song, y'all, and went off and made millions. And you have to really dig and care and research to even be able to say Big Mama Thornton's name as the originator of the Hound Dog song, right? And that was the other piece of that analogy, is that Remick is going to live forever the way that Elvis is going to live forever.
Mm.
Off of that exploitive appropriation that happened of the Black rhythm and blues.
And speaking of that, let's play Pig Robin Clean. That scene, this scene creeped me out. Let's play a little bit of that.
Y'all clean?
Sir. Well, no, we believe in equality and music. We just came here to play. Spend some money, have a good time. Here, I'll show you.
Pick poor Robin clean, pick poor Robin clean. I pick his head, I pick his feet. I would have picked his body, but it wasn't fit to eat. Oh, I pick poor Robin clean, pick poor Robin clean. And I'm dissatisfied having a family.
Toothpicks ain't bad.
A Lord in that jaybird laugh when I pick poor.
So, I played that clip, Audrey, because you brought up, like, you know, Elvis and Big Mama Thornton. That song was originally sung by Black women. You know, and it's and the way he sings is different because I listened to the original, you know, the other recording by Geechee Wiley and L.V. Thomas, and it gives a different vibe. When I saw her them sing that creeped me out. I said I would have locked the doors right then because something didn't sit right with me with that song. And what creeps me out in horror is when monsters do stuff in unison, like how they just had their guitars ready, and I was like, that creeped me out more than probably just about any scene in the movie. That and when they were all outside dancing. I was like, if I see Black people river dancing like that.
You know what? One little quick point that I just learned the other day, tap dance came out of that combination of that Irish jig and a West African dance.
Yes.
So if West Africans and Irish hadn't got together, we wouldn't have tap dance. We wouldn't have Gregory Hines. Okay.
No.
Like,
right. Yeah, right. No. Right. There was a big interchange of that. Like, that's why I love that, you know, being from North Carolina, raise up. When he specifically mentions, like, oh, we're from down the road, and it's like, where's the North Carolina? It's like, you're in Mississippi, bro. But but that is like this reference to where, you know, one of the spaces where a lot of that interchange happened, you know, because this was like from 1600s, you know, on,
right.
Of you know, a musical, you know, cultures around, like, again, economics weren't here and where, you know, where they were. And there was, you know, in the same places and exchanging, you know, exchanging our music.
And I will say about I'm glad you brought that up, Audrey, because I am guilty. I was river dancing 20 years ago in London. At a nightclub, so I had my sinners, mom. I might have got bit. But if I saw some Black people in 1930s river dancing, I'd be like, wait a minute. We only have 3 minutes. I just want to bring up something. My mother texted me. She was like, talk about the Native Americans on the horse. We don't have time, mom, because we only have 3 minutes. But shout out to mom. But real quick, I do want to talk about briefly, who's been getting a lot of flack is Grace Chow, the store owner. And as far as being disconnected from the Black community, you know, in Clarksdale, but her family profits from them. But something we haven't talked about, and shout out to Davey D, who brought this up when I was talking about this, is that we don't talk about her husband, Bo Chow. And what we saw from him is why we saw Grace's disconnect from Bo Chow. We saw allyship. And I know two people, like, you know, it brought up this issues of Black and Asian relations. Did you all get that too, as far as from Bo Chow, about allyship? Or no, or yes, or
yes. and I also saw the sort of, like, Grace was cool with the people that she knew. But she was even cool to, like, Stack. Like, she was very sort of unto herself and kind of protective of herself and the daughter. And that seemed to come from some history.
Yeah.
It just felt like there was more to that story there.
Mm.
That maybe she had dealt with some things, because, I mean, around that time, you know, everybody was racist against Asians.
Yeah, yeah. And their daughter, too, I think, is...
And the daughter had the same sort of, like, cold, self-protective attitude.
Yeah.
It felt like there was a much deeper story there with her and the daughter.
Yeah.
And he kind of had the Beau Child kind of had the sort of freedom to be like easygoing and, you know.
Yeah.
But she, like, I sensed fear. Mm. I sensed, like, you know, a sort of wariness about her.
Yeah. You wanted to say something, Reverend Harry? Very quick, because we have like a minute. Very quick.
Yes. They were served as arbiters of the white establishment as far as they're creating this economic system that that disenfranchised Black people. They took scripts from these sharecroppers that were not really money, and they used that to keep Black people in a certain place. They were just like the store owners today in the hood. They might be friendly to you, but they're profiting from your misery.
It's so much more we could discuss. I gave everybody an hour, and it's and like an hour flew. I didn't even took out the breaks because, you know, an hour flew by. Just everybody, one word, and it's like, just say, what are you taking away from this movie personally? How has this affected your life? One word.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Ancestral healing.
All right. Nas?
Joy anyway.
Joy anyway. Reverend Harry.
The challenge of the Christian Black church to remain relevant in the 21st century.
Reverend Harry said, I got a thesis for you. I just took away with it. It's so many things I took away, but I think it's just the beauty and the power of Black art. Everyone, thank you so much. Thank you to my guests, writers Audrey T. Williams, Nazila Jameson, Kevin Dublin, and Reverend Harry Williams. We'll have links to my guests on our website. And Sinners is out now on streaming platforms. That's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds show with Janae Darden. Thank you to our show producer, Porfirio Rangel, board operator, Damian Miner, and our director of audio programming, David Boyer. And thank you for tuning in. Make sure to go on my Instagram page so you can see Porfirio cosplaying as a vampire. It is fabulous. We'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Until then, be good to yourselves and each other.